Okay, Hosea chapter 12. Hosea chapter 12. Verse 1. Ephraim feeds on the wind. Ephraim feeds on the wind and pursues the east wind continually. What is this wonderful language, Ephraim feeds on the wind? What is this wind? What's going on here? What is Ephraim doing? Anyone?
Feeding on the wind.
Feeding on the wind. Anybody try rat poison or wind lately? Rat poison will kill you. Wind won't do anything for you. You can try to eat wind all day long, but it's not going to do anything for you. He's pursuing it, he's trying to eat it, or that's the idea. He feeds on the wind, but it doesn't do him any good. He continually chases the east wind, but it's not doing anything any good, and eventually it's a chaos. George?
Well, in the part we were studying for tonight, the wind is used to refer to false teaching.
Right.
Like, it's not just nothing, it's bad nothing.
Right, right. He multiplies lies and violence. Here's the consequence of this. Moreover, he makes a covenant with Assyria, and oil is carried to Egypt. The Lord also has a dispute with Judah. Okay, so not just Ephraim, which stands for the northern tribes, but also Judah. Not very long from now, Anastasia and Elliot are going to be wrestling. And then Mrs. Bosworth is going to call over Anastasia and say, Anastasia, now you, and right while she's saying that, little Elliot's going to be thinking, oh, I'm getting away with this, and he's going to be walking away. And Mrs. Bosworth is going to say, Elliot, you get right back here too, because I'm not done with you either. You're both in trouble. The same thing here. Ephraim feeds on the wind. Verse 2, the Lord also has a dispute with Judah. They're not left out of this. They're not innocent. And will punish Jacob. Okay, so from Judah to Jacob is to step back a generation. Everybody is in trouble here. Every descendant of Jacob is in trouble. He will punish Jacob according to his ways. I will repay him according to his deeds. Now, he starts a little history lesson. In the womb, he took his brother by the heel. And in his maturity, he contended with God. All right, I'll just tell you what I think is going on here and in this whole chapter. Do you remember Jacob? Jacob had a brother. His name was? Excellent. Okay, so Jacob came out of the womb doing what? Do you remember? What was Jacob doing when he came out of the
womb?
Right, which was, we would say, oh, that's interesting, but they said that a sign of what? Contend?
Supplanter.
Usurper. Okay, Esau is the older, but this is somehow going to be some sign of, no, Jacob's really going to be the one to supplant his brother. Okay, so later on in life, how did Jacob do that? He did it twice. How did he do it? Once with, and how did he do that? Do you remember?
Esau out of it.
How?
He sold it in place of soup.
Yeah, sold the soup, right. So he cheats him out of that. And then, by the way, was that a very nice thing to do? And then what else did he do? Not only the birthright, but also the
blessing.
And how did he do that?
By another
trickery. Right. By another trickery, by a lie. Okay. So then he runs away, and he goes and he works with Laban there, and he amasses a great deal of wealth, perfectly innocently. Right. There seems to be some superstition going on here. If you do the speckled post and then take the speckled ram and put it in front of the speckled post, it's going to produce another speckled something. Okay. All right. So then he leaves there and he comes back. On his way back through, he says, oh, here comes Esau. And he, what does he do when he's going to see Esau? Sorry?
At that point he was afraid.
And so what did he do? He was afraid, which is the root cause, and he just lined up these gifts. Caravan upon caravan, go out sending them to his brother. And by the way, when his brother finally sees him, what does he say about the gifts?
We didn't need to do that.
You didn't need it. No, thank you. Okay, so Jacob is about to cross over into the land, and what does he do?
Gives
right when he's crossing over into the land, he ends up in a...
splitting of his family.
Okay, that's right there, but he ends up in a wrestling match. With who?
With the angel of God.
Yeah, and he won't let go. And he says to him, who am I talking about? So Jacob says to the angel, what? Bless me. And the angel touches him in the socket and basically says to him, you know, Jacob, you have been fighting against me all your life. You think, in fact, Hosea chapter 12, verse 12, Jacob fled to the land of Aram, and Israel worked for a wife, and for a wife he kept sheep, but by a prophet the Lord brought him back from Egypt, and by a prophet he was kept, okay? So it's mixing the real, the literal Jacob and the figurative Jacob, his descendants. But the idea is here, look, you've been trying to do this all your life, but really I'm the one that's allowing you the position that you're in. That's basically what he's talking about here. So in Hosea 12, verse 8, Ephraim said, surely I have become rich. I have found wealth for myself. In all my labors they will find not in me no iniquity, which would be sin. So he's a little bit self-deceived there. Verse 9, but I have been the Lord your God since the land of Egypt. I will make you live in tents again as the days of the appointed festival. I also have spoken to the prophets. I gave numerous visions. Through the prophets, I gave parables. Okay, so here Ephraim is. Ephraim is in sin. And they're trying, and they're trying, and they're doing all these things, trying to save themselves. They call out to Assyria, they send oil to Egypt, and God says, look, that is not what's going to save you. That has never saved anybody. The only thing that will save anybody is if you put your trust in me. Go back to your founding father. He did all this stuff, but really, the only thing that was saving him was his trust, or his eventual trust, in me. I think that is what is the point here. Verse 2, the Lord has a dispute with Judah, he will punish Jacob. Verse 3, in the womb, he's wrestling. He was always wrestling from his womb to his adulthood. Verse 4, yes, he wrestled with the angel and prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. He found him at Bethel, and there he spoke with us. Even the Lord, the God of hosts, the Lord is his name. Therefore, here's his whole point. Return to your God. Observe kindness and justice and wait for your God continually. Don't call up to Assyria. Don't send oil to Egypt. Don't do all this stuff. Just trust in God, and that is what will save you. That is what I think is going on in this chapter. Maybe somebody has a different opinion. If you do, raise your hand. Verse 1. Ephraim feeds on the wind and pursues the east wind. He multiplies lies and violence. Moreover, he makes a covenant with Assyria, and oil is carried to Egypt. Okay, he's making covenants with two different people, two different powers that are vying for world power. What is he thinking? Okay, so here's Egypt, and they're trying to be the world power, and here's Assyria, and they're trying to be the world power, and he's right in the middle of both of them, and so he sends envoys to both saying, here's some money for you. I'll be what? I'll be what?
Your servant.
I'll be loyal to you. He sends money to Assyria. And he says to him what? I'll be loyal to you. So no matter what, whoever wins, he's going to be okay. Well, loyalty to both is loyalty to none. And so sure enough, when whoever wins, they see that, they're going to say, well, that's just stupid at its root. And the biggest problem with it is that in all their loyalty to Assyria and their loyalty to Egypt, they're not being loyal to who? To God. And that is the most ridiculous part of it. My father was telling me of a man that he knows who, to the best of his ability, or not, I don't want to say that, to the best of his ability, I'll take that back, to some degree, followed the religion of Judaism. To some degree, followed the religion of Christianity. And to some degree, followed the religion of, what's the number three that comes of the Abrahamic religions? Islam. And so somebody went up to him and said, why are you doing this? And he said, I don't know which one is right, and I'm doing them all just to be covered.
Wow. That doesn't
That doesn't work. That's insanity. And you see it so clearly, it's insanity. But have you ever seen, I mean, after all, every single Christian fully commits to the Lord upon their conversion and doesn't trust in anything else, do they? Right. Every single Christian is like that. There is no difference between some Christians and that man that I just described right there. For some Christians, their relationship with God is nothing more than an insurance policy. They'll try to do all this. They'll try to work things out this way. Oh, and they also get God just in case my things don't work out over here. You ever see anybody do that? By the way, I don't think these Ephraimites here said, let's reject Jehovah. Who wants, take a poll, who wants to reject Jehovah? Is that the way they did it? No. In fact, in chapter 6, remember, they're confessing to him. So it's not explicit, let's reject Jehovah, but in chasing things that, did it look from a human perspective, did it look wise to try to be friends with the most powerful nation? Well, yeah, it happens all the time. People do it all the time. But in reality, it had no substance. They're chasing after the wind. Money, job, education. Well, these are, will ensure a good and productive life, all the while neglecting the opportunities God gives us right now with the resources that God gives us right now. Have you ever seen somebody do that? I'm chasing this dream. It might not be job or money or education. It might be something else. But this happens all the time in America. You must go to college to get a good job to be able to live the American dream. That's what you must do.
They go right at it, and their focus is on that, and their focus needs to be on God.
Right. And their focus is on that. Who's they? If we're not careful, and the thing is that we have to work, and this is where the confusion comes in. We must work to provide. And sometimes we have to work very hard to provide. And so there's a subtle, you've got to keep it in your mind. What is, oh, yes, I'm working, and I have to work, but who's really providing? Me and myself, like they say here. Education that excludes, which is really sacrifices, for example, regular Bible. I'm going to pursue an education that totally excludes any ability to have a regular Bible study with myself or somewhere or with somebody else. A job. I'll take a job that totally excludes regular quote-unquote personal work as opposed to the work you do as a congregation. Because, oh, you'll show up to church. I'll show up to church. Oh, no, I wouldn't take a job. Well, maybe I would take a job that would exclude Thursday night. But no, even sometimes, no, I wouldn't ever exclude Thursday night. But you know what I'm doing Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Friday night, and Saturday night? Not studying my Bible, not helping other people, all because I'm chasing this job. Be careful is really the point. But I'll be able to serve God better later. And failing, sorry?
Tomorrow's not
guaranteed. We don't know. All we know that we have is right now. Which is really silly. I will use this spiritually inhibiting resource now to become spiritually enabled later. That's really what's going on. Well, no, that doesn't work. That's crazy. And when you put it in words like this, yeah, it's obvious. Now, the question is, does that fit my situation right now? That's the question. George, you wanted to say something earlier, I think.
I don't remember if it was this class or the Romans class we're doing. I think it was Romans, but you made this point about are we just philosophers?
Yeah,
last.
Yeah, I think it was Sunday. Yeah, Sunday.
Okay, I'm glad I'm not doing it. But anyway, this sense of how practical the perspective can be. Okay, for example, in work, they encourage you to, when you're going out for, let's say, a nice meal, if you don't consider what it costs you in dollars, but in hours to earn those dollars, is it still worth it to you? You know, and you start arranging your resources in a more identifiable way. And when you take money as one resource and then don't consider God one, or your job, but if you put them on an equal playing field and say, okay, God has opportunities here for me, and am I even looking for them? You know,
right.
It really is a functional perspective. To get that to work, you know.
Salespeople read motivational books. Because the way you succeed in sales is by telling yourself that you have not sold enough. I have not sold enough. I will sell more next time. And unless you're really good, selling more requires what? More time. And so you do a little bit better that year, and since you're working for the man's telling you, you did well, but you didn't do good enough. So here, you read this book. This will tell you how to do better. And really all it's saying is, spend more time on the phone. And this vicious cycle, these books are telling you, you're not good enough the way you are, and so it's a mindset that lends itself to, oh, I'll get to this when I can, because I got to be better sales right now. It's a dangerous, dangerous cycle.
There definitely is sin, and then there's definitely stupid that leads to sin.
Right.
I never want a job where I am making, where I'm on a, I get a certain percentage, you know what I'm talking about?
Commission.
A commission, yeah, I don't like to think of the word. You know, things like that, for example, where it's just like, you're setting yourself up to struggle later on. Even if it's not necessarily wrong, you can still make a good judgment choice here. You know, you can have a little discernment, you know.
Right. Right. And by all means, if you can get a good job, get it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, get the good job, because it's more resources for God, really. Go ahead.
It reminds me of Hebrews 12, at the beginning of Hebrews 12, when it says, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which easily hinders us. As George was saying, there's both.
Right.
We need to make sure that we're nothing's hindering us from.
Right. And in America, it's so we, and all over the world, but especially here where it's the whole system is set up to try to make wealth. So chapter 12, then chapter 13. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling. Okay, I threw up this chart a few weeks ago, and the chart explained somewhat to some degree why Ephraim would stand for Israel. Why Ephraim? Well, because Ephraim, Joshua comes from Ephraim, and other things that make Ephraim, and the first king of the northern kingdom was from Ephraim, and they were the ones that were called, look, if you're going to go to fight, if you don't go with Ephraim, if you don't call Ephraim, you're in trouble. Okay, in the beginning, it says, Ephraim spoke, and there was trembling. He exalted himself in Israel. This is actually not necessarily a bad thing in the beginning. Jacob said, to Joseph, or to all the 12 sons before he was dying, that Ephraim would be a distinguished head among all the sons. Okay, that was the blessing. Look, Ephraim, you're going to rise to the top among all, you're going to be top of the world here. Ephraim spoke and there was trembling. He exalted himself in Israel. That's not necessarily bad right there. But through Baal, he did wrong and died. So here you have somebody, his trajectory is up, 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 and then bam, he runs into sin and dies. And that's it. Just like that. Snuffed out. Just a few weeks ago, by the way, it can happen to every single one of us. Any one of us. A few weeks ago, Joe Hamm was here. 15 years ago, when I started bouncing around Rhode Island and the church there, a guy from Wallingford would come up. The guy's name was Andy Rule. You know Andy Rule. He's withdrawn from it. Is that not right? Andy Rule, I knew to expect him. Every gospel meeting we had, and any time I went to Wallingford, when she was just a little tiny thing, there was Andy Rule. And so I asked Joe Hamm just the other day, hey, how's Andy Rule? And he looked at me and he said, he's been withdrawn from. What? I mean, he's Andy Rule. As far as I was concerned, now I didn't know him that well, but he was always there. A few years ago, Joe Hamm's wife's brother, suddenly it turns into homosexual. What? What's going on with that? My father just told me of an elder's son in Florida. Here's a name that I've been hearing for years. Same thing. He just declared, he just came out of the closet. It destroyed his family. What? These things happen. It seems like a good thing going on. Sean Murphy, I remember the boy. When I was up in Tingsboro, or hung out in Tingsboro, it seemed to be an encouraging... He'd have Bible studies at his house. In fact, it might be the first Bible study I ever led was at his house. A few years later, gone, snuffed out. It can happen to every single one of us. Point. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12 says, let he who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. Romans, we just read this, Romans chapter 11. To the Gentile who's been grafted in, Do not become arrogant. And then conceited, in my version a couple words later, is the word conceited. Haughty. Don't do it. Well, what's the warning there for? Because it can happen to every or any one of us. Am I there yet? I don't know what I'm doing. Oop, no. Okay. So Ephraim spoke. And there was trembling. He exalted himself in Israel, but through Baal he did wrong and died. And now they sin more and more, and make themselves molten images, idols skillfully made for their silver, all of them, the work of their craftsmen. They say of them, let the men who sacrifice kiss the calves. Therefore, they will be like the morning cloud, and like the dew which soon disappears. Like chaff is blown away from the threshing floor, and like smoke from a chimney. Even if you don't understand anything, that's not good. All those little pictures there. Verse 7, this is God speaking. I will be like a lion to them. Who wants to volunteer to run in front of the lion? No, because the lion will kill you. The leopard, like a leopard, I will lie in wait by the wayside. I will encounter them like a bear robbed of her cubs. I will tear open their chests, and I will devour them like a lioness, as a wild beast would tear them. It is your destruction, O Israel, that you are against me, against your help. The very one that would help you, talk about biting the hand that will feed you, the hand that's feeding you is going to bite you if you keep on rejecting him. I remember a few years ago, Nikolai told me of a dream that he had. The dream, I forget. The dream was about an elephant getting a woman. And when he was 2 years old, or about four then, guess what that did to him? Terrified him. He was terrified of the elephant getting the woman. I guess I would be too, and I'm 41. But this is the point. Here's a lion and a leopard. This is your future, Ephraim, is full of terror. It will not have been worth it. When they're done, was it worth it, Ephraim? And they'll say, no. Wish I could go back and do things all over. Verse 10. Where is your king, that he may save you and all your cities, and your judges of whom you requested? Give me a king and princess. There, go, you know, you remember that 300 years ago? Where's that big tough guy? He's not going to be able to get you out of this. Verse 16, Samaria will be held guilty, for she has rebelled against her God, and they will fall by the sword. Her little ones will be dashed in pieces. Who wants to see that? Nobody. But that's what's going to happen because of the sin. And their pregnant women will be ripped open. There is such a thing as being too successful, too rich, or too accomplished, or too talented, or too whatever. You fill it in there. Oh, wouldn't it be great to be talented? Yes. Wouldn't it be great to be too talented? No. You can have such a thing as too much talent. You can be too successful. These people, verse 6, Hosea 13:6, as they had their pasture, they became satisfied. And being satisfied in their heart, they became proud. Things were... Go ahead.
I was going to say, that this was spoken of in Deuteronomy.
Yep.
Be careful, because this will happen.
Right.
Where it happens.
When you have all those riches. You remember what chapter?
29 and 30, isn't it?
I think he's thinking of chapter 8. He might be thinking of 29 and 30. I mean, it's definitely in there. But the specific one is, look, I led you through the wilderness so that you would, and gave you manna for 40 years so that you would learn to trust the word of God, so that when you go into the land, you don't become prideful with everything that you have. Whether or not he's referring to that, that's what I was thinking of. Hosea 12, verse 8. Ephraim said, surely I have become rich. I have found wealth for myself. In all my labors they will find me. Chapter 10, verse 1. Israel is a luxuriant vine. He produces fruit for himself. The more his fruit, the more his altars. Oh, is he wealthy? Yes. Is wealth a good thing? Not necessarily. That's what we're seeing right here. There's such a thing as being too successful, too rich, too accomplished. By the way, this goes hand in hand with the point that we made a few minutes ago. I'm going to chase this dream. I'm going to get a great education so I can have a great job and so I can do lots of things and maybe even some of them for the Lord. Okay, but be very careful. Don't do it at the sacrifice of pleasing God with what you have right now, right? And you remember this prayer. Give me neither. Say it again.
It's excess nor want, but it's not written that way, is it?
Well, yes, that's the point. In the New American Standard, poverty or riches. I don't know what the New King James says. Feed me with the food that is my portion, that I will not be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or that I will not be in want and steal and profane the name of my God. You know, just give me, I want to be middle class. And in this country, what a joke that is, right? Right, give me, you know, in this country, we want to be below the poverty level, okay? Give me neither riches or poverty is what ours says. That's our prayer. Don't forget it. Say that one every morning as you're making your decision. Which job will you take? Which school will you go to? What training seminar will you go to? Things like that. Comments or questions here? Yes, George.
Isn't it Matthew 17 or 18 that talks about how hard it is for a rich man to enter heaven?
It's in the Bible.
Okay. I'm thinking it's Matthew 17 or 18, but nobody's shaking their head yes, so I'm going to retract that one. We're kind of our own worst enemy in that sense, aren't we? I'm not even talking about society. I mean, we personally make this decision to make it as hard on ourselves as we possibly can, you know, by pursuing these things and still attempting to maintain a healthy spiritual life at the same time, you know.
Matthew 19. Oh, good one. Yeah, we're our own worst enemy. Because we what?
Because we determine that we're going to make it as difficult for ourselves as we possibly can.
We set ourselves up for failure. Yeah, because our perspective is because we live in this world. And it's so hard to forget that, yes, but this is just decoration. You know, and yes, it's necessary, and it's a necessary decoration, but this isn't the primary purpose, or we're not supposed to, you know, we're not put here just to have fun. We can have fun. Have fun, but as long as God allows it. Any other comment or question here? So, Isaiah 14, if you want to go there, that's fine. I'm still in Hosea. Hosea 14. Oh, I guess I wanted to make this point. Justice does not always come immediately. Okay. We sometimes look for justice, like, when I have sinned, and I can take this negatively, the wrong way. Oh, guess what? I just wasn't punished immediately, so I must be okay. Or we're looking for somebody else. Look what they did. Where is it? Verse 10 of Hosea 13, where now is your king that he may save you in all your cities and your judges whom you requested? Give me a king and princess. I gave you a king in my anger and took him away in my wrath. Referring to Saul and Hoshea, right? I gave you a king in my anger. Do you remember what it was about this, the beginning of this monarchy? What was the problem with it? Do you remember? They wanted it for the wrong reason. They wanted it for the wrong reason. Yeah, he would have given them, he had to give them a king because that's in the plan. But they wanted it for the wrong reason. And so he gave it to them in his anger. Instead of destroying the entire nation and saying, you bunch of numbskulls, he doesn't do that. But guess what happened? Justice eventually came, didn't it? I gave him a king in anger, and because of their continued unfaithfulness, this is just one other sin that will count against them. I gave it to you in my anger. And because of your unfaithfulness, guess what? I'm still angry about it, he says, because you have not been faithful. I initially wrote, justice always comes. That's not really true, because if we got everything that we deserved...
Well, if it doesn't come in this, if it doesn't come on the earth, it will be taken care of in heaven.
Yes, but not all justice. God is not all... He is always just, but he does not always execute justice. For example, if that's all he ever did, every single one of us in here would be lost. but right, so you're reading and you're hearing what I was thinking when I wrote it. But when I wrote it, I said, justice always comes. And I got to look at that and said, no, that's not true. Thank God for his mercy. Okay, so chapter 14. Return, O Israel, to the Lord your God, for you have stumbled because of your iniquity. I think, I haven't verified this, but with the exception of Micah chapter 6, I believe this is one of the last, or the book of Micah, this is one of the last times God is reaching out to the northern kingdom that we read of. It's not like, okay, after he's got like 30 years left, he's never going to say anything to them again. But I believe this is the one of the last explicit times he says to them, look, I'm going to condemn you, but you can still repent. Please return, he says to the Lord. This is what we'd call a deathbed conversion, right? It's coming. Destruction, you know, the basket of summer fruit is what he has seen. Destruction is on the way. They're done for. The nation is going to go down in flames. This would be like bombing the enemy city. And while you're bombing the enemy city, sending convoys into the city to save anybody that will accept the invitation to come out. I'm bombing you, but I'm still trying to save you. Justice declares we burned down that house and everything in it. And so you start burning down the house and everything in it, at the same time sending rescuers inside saying, does anybody want to come out of this house? That's what he's doing here. What a loving God we have. Never give up hope. It's never too late to change. It's never too late to be forgiven. Actually, this is one of those things, well, actually, that's not true, is it? Right? Seek the Lord while he may be found. But as long as he may be found, which is essentially while you're alive or he hasn't come yet, as long as those two conditions are met, then it's not too late. What a loving God we have. So, return to the Lord. This is where, or maybe from where, away from idols. Here's why. For you have stumbled because of your iniquity. Here's how. Take with you words and return to the Lord. Namely, say to him, take away all iniquity, because you cannot stand in his presence unless he has taken away your iniquity. And receive us, and the word has something to do with grace. Graciously is what my version says. Because he cannot take away your sin because of anything that's in you. You haven't worked on it. And so the only way you can stand in his presence is if he takes away your sin. And the only thing that merits taking away our sin is his grace. By the way, the Old Testament is also full of grace, right? That, here's the result, that we may present a fruit of our lips. So you forgive us and we'll present the fruit of our lips back to you. Assyria will not save us. We're not going to trust Assyria. Remember, they're going to Assyria, they're going to Egypt. No, go to him, take to him, say words like this. Assyria will not save me. You are the Lord, you're the only Savior. We will not ride on horses, because remember, they've been riding on horses when they shouldn't have been, because horses won't save. Nor will we say again our God to the work of our hands, for in you the orphan finds mercy. And here's the reply from the Lord. I will heal their apostasy. I will love them freely. For my anger has turned away from them. I will be like the dew to Israel. He will blossom like the lily, and he will take root like the cedars of Lebanon. His shoots will sprout, and his beauty will be like the olive tree, and his fragrance like the cedars of Lebanon. Those who live in his shadow will again raise grain, and they will blossom like the vine. His renown will be like the vine of Lebanon. What a loving God we have. What I'm impressed with is what a compassionate God we have. Does anybody know that adjective? Can anybody say it? Good. What does it mean? Like Hercules. What's it talking about? Strength? Impossibility. I didn't hear what you said, so I can't repeat it. Yes, impossibility. Okay, so I brought my Edith Hamilton mythology. So Hercules did what? Do you remember what he did? This is a myth, by the way. He killed his wife and children. And he was grieving because of it. And so the gods came and said to him, penance. You've got to work this one out, buddy. What does he have to do? 12 impossible tasks. The first one was to kill the lion Nemea, a beast no weapons could wound. That's number one. Go kill a virtually impossible to kill animal. Number two, the second labor was to kill a creature with nine heads called the Hydra. One of the heads was immortal. That's nice. Thank you, gods, for that. Number three, bring back alive a stag with horns of gold sacred to Artemis, who is a god. I've got to go steal a horse or a stag from a god. Good luck with that. Capture a great boar that lives on a mountain. That one's easy. Clean the Aegean, not the sea, but stables in a single day that had thousands of cattle and their stalls had not been cleaned out for years. So how did he do it? He diverted two rivers to clean them out in one day. That's how... See, and we can go on and on with this kind of stuff. That's how a god could be. Now, that's obviously man's imagination. But what does God say? Look, you've sinned. What does God say?
Come back. Please.
Repent. And confess. Take with you words. Wow.
And he spells out the words.
And he tells them. In fact... This goes hand in hand with Micah 6:6. We referred to it last week. We're going to refer to it again this week. So, Micah 6. You're all in trouble. You've sinned. I'm going to destroy you. Verse 6. Micah 6, verse 6. This is their reply. Okay, we've done wrong. How do we appease our Father, our God? With what shall I come to the Lord and bow myself before the God on high? Shall I come to Him with... And the Jew always said, number one, burnt offerings with the yearling and calves. Does the Lord take delight in a thousands of rams? No, not just one. I'll come with a thousand of them. Because maybe that's what God requires of me, they're thinking. Shall I present my firstborn? Not just one burnt offering, not just a thousand. We know that's not good enough for Him. No, He wants our firstborn. The fruit of my body for the sin of my soul. Is that what I have to do to please this God who is angry at me? He has told you, O man, what is good. What does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with God? Wow. What a God. Thank God for who He is. Not only will He forgive us, but we don't have to do some Herculean effort in order to be forgiven. All we have to do is, I change my mind, I accept You as Lord, because You are Lord. I will change my behavior, and now for us, we have to also be baptized and wash away our sins. And that's it. Oh, man, I got to go jump in the water. Comments or questions? Okay, so 8 and 9. Hosea 14, 8 and 9. O Ephraim, what more have I to do with idols? Okay, this is the concluding thoughts. He said, I'm coming to get you, but if you repent, I'll forgive you. Concluding thoughts. Ephraim, what more have I to do with idols? It is I who answer and look after you. I am like a luxuriant cypress. From me comes your fruit. Look, we can't be in the same room. Choose. It's either the idol or it's me. Whoever is wise, let him understand these things. Whoever is discerning, let him know them. Can you think of a similar expression that we read, especially in the New Testament, but in the Old Testament also? At the conclusion of an important thought, Jesus will say it, God will say it 18 times. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. And what is He saying there? What did you have ears? Pay attention. And... act accordingly. Look, this is serious stuff. I've written you a book. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to destroy you if you do not repent. Pay attention and act accordingly. Revelation, well, let's go on just for a second. The righteous will walk in them. Let me back up. I'll read the whole verse. Whoever is wise, let him understand these things. Whoever is discerning, let him know them. For... the ways of the Lord are right, and the righteous will walk in them, but the transgressor will stumble in them. What's He saying there? He said, pay attention, choose, pay attention, I'm coming. And then He says, look, my ways are right. And then what does He say? Summarize it. You'll know them by your fruits. And who is going to do what? Some people will change, but not everybody. That's what he's saying. Some people are going to be some people. This is just like Revelation chapter 22. Let the one who does wrong still do wrong. Is that an invitation to do wrong? No. That knows that there are some, a characteristic of some people is that they simply don't care. And they're not going to change. Let the one who is filthy still be filthy. Let the one who is righteous, this is verse 11 in Revelation 22, still practice righteousness. And the one who is holy still keep himself holy. I'm also reminded of John 3. So in John 3, the beginning of the chapter starts out with who coming to whom?
Nicodemus.
I'm going to walk right into the kingdom. Jesus says, unless you're born again. Nicodemus says, what? I'm a Jew, and I'm a Pharisee. I'm walking right into the kingdom. And Jesus says, no, you have to believe, and who? Whoever believes. Not just Jews, and the plan of salvation is believe in Jesus Christ, right? And also talks about being born again. Now, he ends this whole thing with Nicodemus. Verse 19. This is the judgment, that the light has come into the world. The men loved the darkness rather than the light, for their deeds were evil. For everyone who does evil hates the light and does not come to the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. But he who practices the truth comes to the light, so that his deeds may be manifested as having been wrought in God. And he's essentially saying the same thing. He puts it down in front of Nicodemus. Nicodemus, you have a choice. You can believe what I say or not. And based on your reaction, I will know what kind of a person you are. Because people who accept what I say, well, they're the ones who practice the light, practice the truth. And they come to the light. My words are light, is what he's saying. So that his deeds may be manifested as having been wrought in God. Verse 9 of chapter 14 in Hosea, the righteous will walk in them, but the transgressors will stumble in them. It's the same law. The upright will be, yes, give it to me, I need more. The same law, somebody who doesn't want it will fall all over the place and they'll never get anywhere and they'll hate the whole time they're falling down. Comments or questions here? We started 5 minutes late. That was my fault. So, since it's my fault, we'll go 5 minutes late. No. So we have a little bit more time is what I'm really saying. Could have worded that better. All right, so we're now in, we're going to transition to Micah. Still in the Old Testament. All right, Micah verse 1. The word of the Lord came to Micah of Moresheth in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Okay, so we have Jotham right here, and then we have Ahaz, and we have Hezekiah down there also. Verse 1 also says, concerning Samaria. So I know that some of this has to be before Hoshea. Because Hoshea is in 2 Kings chapter 17. When Samaria is still Samaria in 2 Kings chapter 16 and the first part of 17. So I know that some of this has to do with the northern kingdom. I'll be honest with you and tell you, I don't find any definitive point where it's, oh, this is obviously dealing with only the southern kingdom. I don't find it. So for the fun of it, I just decided to stop at chapter 3, which is probably actually a break right in the middle of a thought, which I rarely try to do. But so, Micah chapter 1, verse 1, verse 2. Hear, O peoples, all of you. Listen, O earth, and all it contains. Let the Lord God be a witness against you. What kind of language is that? A witness? Legal. What's happening? Somebody's being brought to trial. And who's the judge, the jury, and the prosecuting attorney? God. So who's wrong? The defendant. Which is interesting because in chapter 6, it's the defendant's turn to reply. Hear now what the Lord is saying, chapter 6, verse 1. Arise, plead your case before the mountains, and let the hills hear your voice. And guess what? Never happens. Nobody ever stands up to say, oh, we have this against you, God. That's the funny thing about chapter 6. Chapter 6, go ahead, God says. Bring your case against me to court. And he waits, and he waits, and nobody ever stands up. The rest of the book is his case against them. Verse 3, behold, the Lord is coming forth from his place. He will come down and tread on the high places of the earth. We could stop there. Does that sound like fun? The mountains will melt under him. The valleys will be split like wax before fire, like water poured down a steep place. Oh, yeah, how exciting. No, this is language where you're reading it. It should invoke terror. This is what happens. This is the cost of sin. I'm going to skip down to verse 10. Tell it not in Gath, weep not at all. And then there are a series of puns. At Bethel Lafra, roll yourself in the dust. In the house of dust, roll yourself in the dust. Go on your way, inhabitant of Shafir, which sounds like the word for beautiful, in shameful nakedness. Oh, you think you're beautiful? In reality, guess what? You're shamefully naked. The inhabitant of Zanon does not escape. The inhabitant of the place that goes out, nobody's going out from the place that goes out. Verse 12, the inhabitant of Maroth becomes weak waiting for good. The inhabitant of Bitter wants good, but he never gets what is good. Because the calamity has come down from the Lord, the gate of Jerusalem. Harness the chariot to the team of horses. The word for horses is like Marrakesh, but Larrakesh, which sounds a lot like Lakish. Oh, inhabitant of Lakish. So, you Lakish people who like your Larrakishes, go get the Larrakish, but it's not going to help for you people from Lakish. Verse 14, therefore I will give you parting gifts on behalf of Moresheth Gath, which sounds like me Orisha, which is the word for a bride in waiting who would receive a dowry. Oh, you're waiting for a dowry? Oh, you're going to get gifts, all right. In fact, you're going to be giving them away. The houses of Akzib, however you pronounce that, will become deception. The word Akzib sounds like deception. Pun after pun after pun. He's going around and pinpointing. I meant to bring a map. I didn't. All these different cities in Israel, northern kingdom and southern kingdom, and saying this place is totally going to fall apart. Verse 16, make yourself bald and cut off your long hair. Because of the children of your delight, extend your baldness like the eagle, for they will go from you into exile. Bad things are going to happen. God is a God of love. What we've just read in these last few chapters, in fact, throughout many of the prophets, is that God is going to kill them. How does that square with God is a God of love? Keep reading.
I was going to say, we just read it. Look at Hosea 14.
Right.
So he still wants them to come back.
Is he a God of love? And we go to places like Hosea 14 where it says, look, he still wants them to come back. Is God only, if you will, is God's only characteristic love? What else, among other things? Just. He is a just God also. Don't forget about that one. The good news, how is I'm going to kill you good news? After all, we are reading from the prequel to the good news.
Because he always includes it unless.
Yes.
Yeah, if he's telling you he's going to kill you, you're still alive.
That's the good news. That's the good news.
Hot.
Right. Yeah, the good news is always prefaced with the bad news, right? You got to hear the bad news before the good news even will be applicable to you. Stay away from sin. That's always a good one to put up there. You always know you're going right with stay away from sin, right? Okay. Verse 13. Harness the chariot to the team of horses, O inhabitant of Lachish. That's verse 13. O inhabitant of Lachish. Who here, again, I meant to bring my map, didn't. Who here remembers where Lachish is?
Philistine territory.
And when the border didn't include the Philistine territory, 5 miles. She was the beginning of sin. I don't know exactly what this refers to. But apparently it has something to do with some sin began in Lachish. Inhabitant of Lachish, she was the beginning of sin. Now the connection that we make, or that I'm making from here, is, oh, here are the Philistines. And what are they known for? Their reverence of Jehovah? No. In the city that is closest to them, apparently, became the beginning of sin. So what did they allow themselves to do? To be influenced by it. Let me read this to you real quick. Diesel engine exhaust particles, that is particulate matter, carbon monoxide and hydrocarbons, cause headaches and nausea. Long-term exposure to diesel exhaust particles poses highest cancer risk of any toxic air contaminant. Particulate exposure increases exponentially with proximity to the source. So what aren't you going to do? Yeah, I think I'm going to stay away from this stuff. I'm not coming to the barn where you got the tractor running. Okay? I'm not going around there. Right? Stay away from sin. Do you remember what happened to Lot? Lot looks over the valley. What did he see down there? Oh, it's wonderful. He'd be very successful. Money. And so he goes down there. And was Lot affected by the sin around him negatively? We know that he walked around and his heart was tormenting him as he saw the sin. Was he affected negatively? I'm going to guess he was not. I think I'm wrong. But for the sake of this conversation, let's pretend Lot was not affected at all. When the angel came to Sodom, what did Lot's wives' husbands say? Didn't affect Lot, we'll say, but who did it affect? Lot's children. If nothing else, they married into people that, yeah, that's funny. They didn't take the word of the Lord seriously. That's what happens. I'm going to march right into the thick of the sin and just stay there. Oh, it won't hurt me. Oh, okay. No. Because 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33 says, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. Same point. Psalm 1:1. Blessed is the person who walks around in the midst of sin and sits down and listens and has friends that are all sinners. Right. Don't even go there, right? Oh, we'll close with this thought, unless somebody else has another thought, of course. But let me go on. You recognize this from Sunday. As I was putting these together, I realized, hey, this goes together somewhat cohesively. Okay, so here we have a girl that has just finished preaching, now saying a prayer. That's a pretty drastic departure from the pattern. Did they just jump right to that? Did they go from following the pattern to just drastic, obviously, clearly?
It's one gradual step at a time.
Right. I don't know what the first step was. But it was a gradual step. One little one, and that happened. That's what happens. That's what happens. Oh, by the way, before that, you want to see somebody saying something? Before that gradual, that first gradual step, whatever it was, before that first gradual step, what did they do?
Oh, you talked about this in the
show. Oh, good. Well, what I'm getting at is, I know I poorly worded the question, but before they did it, they thought about it. And they flirted with it. Whatever it was, that first gradual step, they flirted with it. So again, it's all about mind control. It's about identifying what's right, what's not. You know, this is assuming that we're trying to please the Lord the way that He is, and assuming that we have some amount of Bible knowledge. There's a pattern. This is my understanding of the pattern. Okay, and then somebody comes along and introduces something else. And we can either flirt with the idea or not. That's it. So it's all about... It started before one little step. It actually started with something in the mind, right?
Somebody comes in with a different idea. Test their idea with the Word. If it's not in the Word, get rid of it.
Examine all things. Hold fast to that which is good. Any other comment or question? Yes.
I have a question, and it's unfortunately hard. Okay. I'm really about to make a connection here in my head, and it does have to do with something you said while we were studying prophets earlier. God is talking to them, and you made a point, and I wish I could remember what it was, about see, look at this. This was the first step. It didn't have to do with doing the wrong thing. It had to do with not being zealous in their offerings or something.
You say earlier? Was that like 5 years ago?
It was months ago.
Sorry. My brain don't work like that.
Okay, that's fine. I'll go back into this.
Yeah.
Because it was a really good point that I'd never seen that before. It fully applies.
That's correct. Okay. I forget it. Yeah, sorry. We'll talk more later with your brush. Okay, who has a song? Or who's... Okay, George Tweedy is. So if you have an announcement, get it to him, and he will lead us in a period of worship in just a minute.